I'm Anna.
I'm Saruti.
And welcome to Red Handed. Prudity Part 2.
Yeah.
Fiddly diddly.
Mm-hmm. And if you thought last week was bad, prepare yourselves.
I still feel underprepared, to be honest.
Let's do it. Regardless. I'm sure that's how Sean Combs' lawyers all feel. So it's a good theme.
Well, the ones that have stuck around.
Quite.
Anyway, if you haven't listened to last week, that's on you. Last week, we left you with the sad Sean Diddy Combs flailing for bail behind bars in a Brooklyn jail. Desperately jealous of Luigi. I love that detail so much. And even as he has been incarcerated, not a single one of Sean Combs' previous pals have stuck up for him.
Yeah.
Not a sausage.
Wouldn't be the best move, would it? I mean, Jay-Z is just like, who?
Oh, well, Jay-Z will get
don't know
quite
him.
The dressing down in this episode.
Never
don't
heard of him.
Don't worry about it. Nobody has come to Diddy's defence, except his lawyers, who are being paid to, and even then, not always. The silence from the rich and the famous has rung through the world louder than Gal Gadot's tone-deaf Imagine cover. Do you remember that?
I wish I did.
Oh, wow. Just
that time when we were all locked in our houses and we had to watch celebrities sitting outside their mansions crying.
Yeah, that's the one.
I remember.
We have been promised, us the plebs, not the rich and the famous, that Sean Combs' co-conspirators will be revealed during the criminal trial.
Oh, we can't wait.
For confirmation, although we can make some pretty educated stabs in the dark as to who will be on that list. But let's face it, in a world this dark and hopeless, a promise means fuck all. So maybe our stabs will be all we'll have. I have a feeling that a certain power couple are going to walk out of this completely unscathed.
I was going to say, I mean, look, I know we all hope that there will be some revelations, some unmasking, some naming and shaming going on. But when that list is predominantly going to be made up of incredibly rich, famous and influential people, is that going to happen? Particularly the two people we're thinking of.
I think for some people it will.
Yeah.
Those two, not a chance. Not a chance, which is a shame. But for others who are less completely in charge of music, others will, I think, go down.
Yeah. Let's see. The silencing that's already happened. So even people like, okay, Jaguar Wright, who's always been like a pretty out there person. And this isn't specifically about Sean Combs, but like she went on Piers Morgan and was saying all sorts of stuff about Jay-Z and Beyonce. The next day, Piers Morgan was like, we should have never had her on. We never should have said those things. We apologize. He apologized for it. And I was like, so I don't know. I'm not holding out much hope that the two of them will go down in any sort of tangible way.
Before we continue, we've forgotten the most important part of this episode. Thank you, Beyonce. Thank you for everything.
For now, because we are currently in the pre-trial era, for now, we can talk about the civil proceedings, because there's a lot of those to get through while we wait for Diddy to go down slash not go down. Let's find out. The first person we're going to kick off with today is a lady named Talia Graves, who was the 11th person to sue Sean Combs. And she did so on the 24th of September, 2024, for rape and revenge porn. Back in 2001, Talia's then boyfriend was a bad boy executive. And according to her suit, this is what happened 25 years ago. At the Daddy's House studio, the site of many sexual abuse accusations, Sean Combs and his bodyguard, Joseph Sharman, drugged Talia, tied her up, and raped her as she lay unconscious. And, according to Talia, they filmed the whole thing. Talia says that she then woke up, naked, with her hands tied behind her back. At which point, Sharman slammed her face into a pool table, and then Sean Combs raped her vaginally and anally. When he was finished, Sherman then forced his penis into Talia's mouth so violently that she passed out. Then, according to Talia, she was driven by a bad boy employee to a hospital. And the doctors there who took care of her urged her to make a police report. But she said she was just too afraid. Just like Joy Dickerson Neal before her, Talia only found out about the rape tapes years later, when it was revealed to her that loads of bad boy affiliated men had already watched it.
Let's talk about these videos for a second. A lot of the filings mention like revenge porn, right? And I think there are people who say that these videos were being sold. That's not what this is about. Yeah, like, yeah. Realistically, how much are you going to be able to sell a revenge porn video for? And Diddy doesn't need money.
No.
Right? Yeah, if it's true. What he was doing was using these videos of him or other people to filing unconscious women against their will and knowledge. He's using them as a power play.
Absolutely.
In a game where women are ultimate property.
Exactly. I mean, it's fucking small potatoes for him selling videos of women that he sexually assaulted on the internet. Like, this is all about power. It's all about control. It's all about humiliation. It's about domination. That's what it is. And I know they're using the term revenge porn in these like filings. I find that a weird word for what's happened here. Because to me, revenge porn is like, you've made sexually explicit content with your partner, or you've sent them pictures, or sent pictures that you maybe were like okay with being taken but not being shared with other people. In what world is this revenge porn? This is just videos of sexual assault, because they're like unconscious most of the time, aren't they?
Well, I think it's one of those things where like the exact legal wording just doesn't really exist. Yeah. So it's like the closest you can get to. And also, Diddy's legal team are claiming, they're not denying that the videos exist, they're claiming it's all consensual. So it kind of fits both narratives in that way. Anyway, it's not really about men or, well, no, it is about men. It's about men and it's about power. It's not about, it's about proving to other men that you're the biggest and baddest and best.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in 2023, Talia's ex-boyfriend told her that Diddy and his bodyguard had a pattern and practice of non-consensually recording women engaging in sexual acts and making those videos available to the public, including by selling tapes as pornography. And Talia's ex-boyfriend worked for Bad Boy for years, so he would know.
Yeah. So actually, the whole reason that Talia was in the studio that day was because Sean Combs had called her in to speak to her about her boyfriend's performance at work.
Which is such an odd thing to do. Like, your boyfriend's going to have an appraisal. Do you want to come in and talk about it?
I mean, he's just so lazy. So to this day, Talia Graves struggles with PTSD, severe depression, and a life of constant fear. So many elements of Talia's claims bear such a similarity to the cases that we talked about last week. And we have actually checked that there wasn't just some sort of like cross-contamination between the suits in the press. And so that information has been leaked, and that's why this story has come out. Don't really think that that's the case here.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's worth saying, however, it is quite difficult to keep track, because quite a lot of the people who have filed these civil suits initially did it anonymously.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they refiled with their own name.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you'll be reading it and you're like,
yeah.
I don't think in Talia's case, that's what's happened. I think it is, as we were saying last week, he has a pattern of behavior.
Exactly. And so, you know, some people could look at this. I don't know who, even Sean Combs' friends aren't coming to his defense. Some people could look at this and say, you know, these repeated stories that sound exactly the same could speak to people lying. Don't think that's the case. I think it shows, like Hannah says, a repeated pattern of behavior by Sean Combs. And also look at all of the anecdotal evidence that has racked up against him throughout the decades. I think that just makes it much more likely that what these people are saying is true. Now, more familiar assertions came with suit number 12, when a Floridian model, filing as a Jane Doe, claimed that Diddy had tracked her location, which is cyberstalking.
Mm-hmm.
That is a crime. It's, you know, it's obviously just one part of many things that Diddy is doing, but that kind of controlling and monitoring of somebody else's location and their movements without their consent is stalking.
Did you know that someone plants an AirTag on you, you'll get a notification on your phone being like, someone is following you?
Oh my God.
Because obviously if an AirTag isn't registered to your phone,
yeah,
you can like,
yeah, yeah,
be like, oh, my keys, whatever. But if there is an AirTag that is not yours, close enough to you for a long enough amount of time, you'll get a notification.
Wow.
Mm.
That's interesting.
It's good, isn't it?
Mm. Sticking with this Jane Doe, who's this Floridian model that Diddy is, you know, allegedly stalked her location. Apparently, he also flew her to his various homes and constantly pressured her into engaging in sex acts with men and women against her will from 2020 to 2024. And, you know, this isn't a particularly shocking thing. We've seen this with, like, cult leaders quite a lot, I would say, which is the thing of, like, he doesn't just force these men and women to have sex with him. It is also the watching. He wants them to do it with other people so that he can watch, film, masturbate, etc. It is that all-consuming power he has over these people, like Puppet Master.
Absolutely.
That's what he wants. Now, according to this Jane Doe, during that time, Bad Boy employees often used coercive and harassing language to compel her to comply with Diddy's deviant desires. Every time she says she visited Sean Combs, he would ply her with alcohol and other drugs until she passed out. And then she would often wake up bruised with no memory at all of the night before. After one such night, during which she was forced to ingest ketamine, the woman found out she was actually pregnant. Sean Combs's then girlfriend, Young Miami, pressured this Jane Doe to terminate that pregnancy. And the Jane Doe claims that she miscarried anyway. But the harassment never stopped.
And we're going to continue to talk about possession of women as a status symbol and why that is so central to rap and hip hop. It's actually a really interesting analogy. I've linked the video essay that brings this up anyway, and I talk about it at the end too. It's called It's Bigger Than Diddy. It is so worth your time. And this is the point it makes. Like, so in the 90s, no one was more in touch with local artists than strip club DJs. Nobody. And what happens in a strip club? Men walk in, they are presented with a whole bunch of women, and then they pick what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And that attitude towards women translated into hip hop music videos in an OnlyFans free world, where that's kind of, you know, unless you could steal a VHS from somewhere, that's kind of the only porn that was around that was like, not just like a magazine. So therefore, societal beauty standards sort of changed and were defined by music videos and also this attitude of possession and buying access to women's bodies. And that all just became really entwined in the genre. And that's not new completely. Like, women have always been in music videos. It's always been part of it. But there was loads more skin on show now than there ever had been before. And this, it's the like, the transaction of money for sex being very central hadn't happened before. And it happened so much that a lot of rap videos were censored and only played after a watershed.
Yeah. So with that being said, let's get back to the now times and introduce a new character into our story today. Texan lawyer, Tony Busby. Who, I know what he actually looks like, but when I imagine him, I imagine him like the rich Texan out of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, I don't think this is true or fair, but because of some of the things that have been said about him, in my head, he's Lionel Hutz. He's not.
Lionel Hutz in a cowboy hat.
He's not Lionel Hutz. No, money down. I think he's a better lawyer than Lionel Hutz.
Yeah. And, you know, just to... Maybe he can use this as a tagline on his website, because he is the man that Jay-Z is so threatened by that he has tried to ruin his life.
Oh, like, yeah.
Good enough lawyer that Jay-Z is trying to ruin my life.
Jay-Z wants Tony Busby's head on a platter.
Yeah. So on the 1st of October last year, Tony Bosby announced to the press at large that he was representing 120 people who are filing sexual abuse suits against Sean Diddy Combs. And he added that 25 of those people were minors at the time of the alleged abuse, the youngest of them having been just 9 years old. Bosby also told the press that this child was invited to the Bad Boy Studios during record deal negotiations. I mean, it is staggering. A nine-year-old. I'm trying to visualize what a nine-year-old looks like. Young. So this is what they say happens. When they were at the Bad Boy Studios, the nine-year-old child was sexually abused by Sean Combs and several others. All of the victims on the younger end of the scale thought that Sean Combs was going to make them a star. And so, Sean Combs had unfettered, unlimited access to them.
Diddy did have the power to make these children and their parents do whatever he wanted because they believed that it was part of the deal. A necessary, barefaced evil of the music industry. We heard from adults last week who accepted that trade-off to be unavoidable and true. So it's no wonder that Sean Combs and others at Bad Boy were able to convince children of this deal with the devil. And fame does have a cost. I don't think it should be a blind eye.
No. Now, going through all 120 separate suits is going to be really, really difficult to do, especially when a lot of them are so similar in the claims that they're making. But we are going to do our best without diminishing the claims of those who have filed. It's also, and this is just worth bearing in mind, very hard to keep track of like what's going on with these filings because at least many of Busby's 120 have also filed anonymously.
And also, everything changes every 5 seconds. So a lot of the 120, not a lot, some of the 120 have now been dropped. Yeah. Some of them no longer have Tony Bosby representing them, blah, 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 blah. And I'm sure the second we stop recording this, it all will have changed again.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you're a longtime Red-Handed listener, you know that we try our best always to name the victims, to tell their side of the story as is, you know, their right to do. But with this case, it's really, really difficult because as with any of these kind of historical abuse claims where there is a huge number of victims, it's hard to go through all of them. But what we have done is put them into groups. Can't go through all of them separately, but here is our best shot. Let's start with a selection of suits filed by aspiring artists who came into contact with Sean Diddy Combs and Bad Boy Entertainment. One plaintiff claims that he was taken to audition for Sean Combs in 2005. At just 10 years old. A consultant that his parents had hired took this boy to a hotel room where he was given a drink that made him feel a little funny. He claims that he was then left alone in the room with Sean Combs, who forced the 10-year-old boy to perform oral sex on him until he lost consciousness. When he came round, the boy says that his trousers were undone and that his anus hurt badly. Even though Sean Combs warned the young boys never to tell, he did.
The 10-year-old John Doe told his parents as soon as he could, but they were too scared of the consequences, so they never reported the assault. Like Dawn Richard, another Making the Band contestant has filed as well. And they claim to have been just 17 when Combs started to sexually abuse him, all while filming the MTV reality show. According to this complaint, these abuse sessions were disguised as private interviews in which Combs asked the teenager how he would handle the sexual pressure of the industry. And it would appear that Diddy took this technique offset too. Another John Doe in the Busby 120 has accused Sean Combs of sexually assaulting him at an after party in 2015. The 23-year-old aspiring rapper had been booked as an opener in an LA club. Combs met with the performer after he finished his set, seemingly to discuss Bad Boy's interest in the artist. The young man was handed a drink by Sean Combs, and then quickly started to feel lightheaded and like he was in danger of losing consciousness. In this inebriated state, the John Doe claims that he watched Sean Combs and his bad boy entourage engage in group sex. Then Combs ordered the aspiring rapper to have sex with a woman while he watched. The John Doe managed to escape. Again, allegedly, allegedly, allegedly. But others were not so lucky.
Another of the Busby 120 has accused Sean Combs of sexually assaulting him in a private room of a New York nightclub in 2012. This John Doe was a model and at the time just 17 years old. And he says that that night he was given a shot of vodka, probably Ciroc, by Sean Combs, and that he immediately started to feel quite odd, and that sexual assault followed.
I would love to see Ciroc's sales. It's going to be bad, isn't it?
Ooh.
I don't know if they're ever going to recover. They're going to have to rename it.
Yeah, I mean, who wants to be seen drinking that after all this?
I don't think I ever have seen anyone drink it. He's going to order. Anyway, never mind.
It just gets worse, because there are also more recent examples from the Busby 120, one of whom is described as a male entertainer, which, I don't know, maybe means stripper, maybe means sex worker, not sure. But either way, the man's job doesn't mean that he doesn't have a right to sue Sean Combs. Because, yeah, even if you are a sex worker, obviously you can still be raped and sexually assaulted. So this Vegas-based man has claimed that over 5 years, Sean Combs and others from Bad Boy Entertainment sexually assaulted him, drugged him, and coerced him into sexual acts with other people, always dangling the promise of a leg up in the music industry. Allegedly, Sean Combs would insist that this man cover himself in baby oil. And if anyone expressed any sort of reluctance, Sean Combs would scream, throw things, and become increasingly violent, like a toddler.
We visited the freak-off parties last week. They are definitely the most famous type of event now that Sean Combs is associated with. But there were loads of others in Diddy's calendar. There were white parties, black parties, Halloween parties, and most ominously, Wild King Nights. We'll get there. Three men in the Busby 120 have claimed that they were assaulted by Combs at his famous white parties that he held in the Hamptons every year. Everyone goes.
Yep.
Leo goes. One of these three men has claimed that he was just 16 when Sean Combs groped his genitals, and one of the other men claimed that Combs drugged him before raping him in a van. And the third of the Hamptons accusers claims that in 2020, Combs and others took turns anally raping him at one of these Hampton white parties.
And one of many Jane Does alleges that she was 19 when Sean Combs fondled, molested and raped her in a hotel room in 2004. That year, Sean Combs would have been 35.
Another woman has alleged that Combs forced her to perform oral sex on him and his bodyguards at a Halloween party in 2001.
Multiple men and women have filed suits, all claiming that Sean Combs invited them back to some sort of after party where they were all drugged, raped, and passed around to well-known public figures like party favors. Some of these suits allege that there were rooms full of naked people already waiting for them. And others claim that the plaintiffs were knocked out and then woke up to sore bodies and Sean Diddy Combs looming over them. These claims span from the early 90s all the way up to the present day.
Someone who hasn't filed anonymously is a lady called Latroya Grayson, who lives in Oklahoma now. She has claimed that after being raped at a black party in 2006, by Sean Combs and others, she woke up in a hospital with absolutely no idea what had happened to her. But she absolutely was sure she only had two drinks the night before. And after she was discharged, she received a call from an anonymous woman warning her that reporting the assault would be pointless because Sean Combs was so famous and had so much influence.
Yeah.
That's something that you see quite often in all of these filings is baby oil's always there, drugging always there, sexual assault, confined spaces happen a lot too. Mm-hmm. But often there is a call the next day, usually, sickeningly to say, from a woman saying, don't you dare.
Yeah, yeah. And Sean Combs, it's important to point out, he wasn't just doing this as if it wouldn't have been bad enough to people he could maybe even deny knowing, maybe even deny like having been at this party, because we also have Sean Combs' former assistant who is claiming sexual battery against his former employer. Phil Pines worked for Sean Combs between 2019 and 2021. And his lawsuit gives us a very good look at the inner workings of Bad Boy Entertainment. During Phil Pines' years with Sean Combs, he claims that he was ordered to coordinate drug-fueled evenings called Wild King Nights. In order to be bestowed with this organizational honor, Pines had to perform a sex act in front of Sean Combs to prove his worthiness and his loyalty. I mean, honestly, the more and more you get into the Sean Combs story, the more and more it reads like a cult leader. Even the white parties, white nights, like, it's very Jim Jones-esque. Mm-hmm.
I really, really hope that no one ever says that to him. Because he will love that.
I know, I know. You didn't hear it. So Pines' job was to provide drugs and sex toys to fuel days-long sexual escapades, which he then also had to clean up after as well.
I've left out the description, but it's in there.
Oh, no.
Just a little treat for you.
Oh, God. So when the Wild King was on the road, Pines was in charge of a black Gucci bag full of party provisions. A bag that Combs liked to call his MVP bag.
Grow up. He's such a pick last in PE, were you? Fuck, it's pathetic.
He really is. Now, on multiple trips, Phil Pines had to make sure that Sean Combs' bedroom was equipped with red lights, ice buckets, alcohol, joints, honey packs for male libido, baby oil, Astroglide, towels, illegal drugs, power banger sex machines.
Direct quote.
Yeah. And morning after pills, as well as CLS.
Which, if you don't know, is a Viagra alternative.
Yeah. It's just a one-stop rape shop. Disgusting. What is a power banger sex machine?
Do you want me to tell you?
Yes.
Okay.
Tell me.
Are you familiar with the band Steely Dan?
I've heard of them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They are named after one such power banging sex machine.
Okay.
It's essentially, it's like a dildo that's on like a big, long thing.
Oh, okay.
And then you can control
right
how hard and fast.
Like a dildo on a semi-pneumatic drill.
Absolutely, exactly that.
Great. So glad I know that now.
You did ask.
I did.
It doesn't take a genius to guess what Sean Combs' legal team had to say about this giant pile of very incriminating claims from someone who worked for him.
Uh-huh.
Camp Combs told Rolling Stone, "No matter how many lawsuits are filed, it won't change the fact that Mr. Combs has never sexually assaulted or sex trafficked anyone, man or woman, adult or minor. We live in a world where anyone can file a lawsuit for any reason." Yes, good. What other alternative is there? Anyway, fortunately, a fair and impartial judicial process exists to find the truth, isn't it? Does it? And Mr. Combs is confident he will prevail in court.
Right. I'm sure that that quote's going to change as and when he's found guilty.
Well, I mean, they use it again and again. Like, that particular, like, anyone can file a lawsuit. They love that one.
Mm-hmm.
They've trotted it out in various formats to multiple publications, but no one believes them.
No. And also, if you are Sean Combs' lawyer, like, what else are you going to say?
Mm.
If I was, I'd be like, yeah, I would just say, well, anyone can file a lawsuit. Stop asking me more questions.
They don't have a choice.
Yes. And here is a picture of Sean Combs' Costco membership. Like, what else are you going to be able to say, really?
We're eligible for Costco, by the way.
I know.
I'm dealing with it. Anyway, they're going to have to keep saying it. because they A, have nothing else to say, and B, sexual assault allegations are just not stopping. Another Jane Doe has claimed that Combs violently raped her in the bathroom during a Biggie promotion event in 1995 after she rejected his advances. And he told her that she would disappear if she ever spoke to anybody.
Yeah, and as Hannah said earlier, being cornered by Sean Combs in like some sort of confined space is another running theme for women who have filed these suits against him. One has even claimed that Sean Combs drugged and assaulted her moments before that stampede that we told you about in the last episode broke out at the 1991 CCNY event that Sean Combs had, of course, organized. Combs apparently led this woman to a small makeshift dressing room where she lost control of her faculties, probably following a shot of vodka, and then he raped her. Now, that wouldn't have left him much time to dole out all of that CPR that he told the police about during the following investigation into the overcrowded disaster.
I know which one I believe. And then we've got the personal trainer, whose complaint against Combs claims that he was drugged and passed around at the after party of the BET Awards in 2022, the night that Combs was given his Lifetime Achievement Award. And there are also suits that, if true, display Sean Diddy Combs as an opportunist as well, not always being delivered human beings like sex toys by his entourage. One such example, allegedly, happened at the Macy's flagship store in 2008. And Macy's might seem like an odd place to find Sean Combs until you remember his Sean John clothing line that had a weird moment for a bit. So the complaint is this. A male Macy's employee claims that Sean Combs walked onto the shop floor with three bodyguards and then, in the middle of Macy's, orally raped him. And when he finished, Combs asked, "Do you like that white boy?" The employee reported the incident to Macy's own security, and then he was very promptly sacked after Macy's signed a multi-million deal to stock the Sean John line in their stores.
Wow.
Huge if true.
Yes.
Which it is.
Fuck yeah.
Allegedly.
Yes. Right, and the last one before we move on to Hannah's predictions for Jay-Z's imminent downfall.
I'm so excited.
Is a suit filed on the 13th of January 2005.
I feel like I've been carrying a baby of Jay-Z hatred.
It's time to birth that bitch.
And now it's birthing time.
Uh-oh. Get the towels ready. But before we do that, back in 2000, when the plaintiff, who is filing as a Jane Doe, was 16 years old, she says she was walking home through Lower Manhattan. According to this Jane Doe, she had just finished babysitting in a building where a well-known woman, whom the defendant was in a relationship with, also resided. As she walked out of said building that housed very famous unnamed woman, who may or may not allegedly be from the block, Combs was apparently waiting outside in an SUV with an open door. According to the Jane Doe, Sean Combs pressured her into the car. And once he got her inside, he handed her a drink to calm her down. There were also two other men in the car. As the teenager became unsteady following this drink, she was driven off to an unknown location, where she alleges that Combs raped her. When he was finished, the teen was driven to her parents' house and simply dumped in the foyer.
Some outside of the Bad Boy Club have been named and shamed as well. The first being Mr. Sean Carter, aka JC.
Yeah.
So let's get into all of his 99 problems. A Jane Doe, who now lives in Alabama, has claimed that in September 2000, she tried to get into the VMAs, which was at Radio City Music Hall that year, and she didn't manage it, which might have something to do with the fact that she was 13 years old.
Yeah, I mean, 13? That was a question I had when I heard. So I was like, 13, why are you on your own trying to get into the VMA party?
I haven't spoken to her parents, so I don't know. But I think the 13-bit I can't answer. Mm-hmm. I think in that period of time, especially in New York, especially hip-hop affiliated things, people would just show up to see if they could get in.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like being in the audience at Top of the Pops. You would just go and queue, sure, and maybe you'd get in.
Yeah.
So that night, allegedly, this barely teenage girl may have been turned away from the main event, but her night didn't end there. She was approached by one of Bad Boy's drivers, who told her that she, quote, fit what Diddy was looking for. The man then took her to an after party in a white house where the 30-year-old Sean Diddy Combs was waiting. And according to this complaint filed by Tony Busby a few months ago, this party was full of celebrities doing all sorts of sex and drugs, most noticeably a whole bunch of coke being shoved into a whole bunch of famous noses. Once inside the White House, the teen was given an NDA to sign and a bitter-tasting drink. Predictably, as we have seen so many times before, she started to feel quite funny, so she went to find a bedroom to lie down in. A little while later, Sean Carter, Jay-Z, came into the room with an as yet unnamed female celebrity, who is referred to as Celebrity B in the lawsuit. Apparently, allegedly, what happened is Sean Combs was the first to approach the young girl, and he grabbed her by the throat and he asked her, "Are you ready to party?" And then Jay-Z held the child down and raped her. Combs went next, and then Celebrity B watched the whole thing. The terrified teen somehow managed to escape and she rang her dad, who came to pick her up. I have to explain Celebrity B.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm scared.
Mm.
What happened was, yeah, originally, when this suit was filed, it only named Sean Combs.
Yeah.
And then it was Celebrity A and Celebrity B, mm-hmm, in the filing.
Yeah.
It was refiled, naming Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Celebrity B, without that context, yep, makes you think some things.
Yeah.
I still think them. But, like, it's not as,
yeah, yeah,
pointed as it feels.
Yeah. I see what you mean. We don't know. We don't know. Obviously, Jay-Z's alleged involvement in this situation attracted a lot of press attention. This filing really stood out from the rest.
Because, like, other men are named, right? But they're always Bad Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not that famous. Like, people know who Half Pierre is, but you couldn't pick him out of the lineup, probably.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So in the face of this additional scrutiny, Sean Combs' legal team trotted out their usual retorts. Attorney Erica Wolfe called the numerous lawsuits shameless publicity stunts designed to extract payments from celebrities who fear having lies spread about them. Just as lies have been spread about Mr. Combs, as his legal team has said before, Mr. Combs has full confidence in the facts and the integrity of the judicial process. In court, the truth will prevail. And Mr. Combs never sexually assaulted or trafficked anyone, man or woman, adult or minor. Mr. Sean Carter, Jay-Z on the other hand, employed quite a different approach to the accusations. He has vehemently denied the allegation that he drugged and raped the 13-year-old back in 2000. And to that end, he has released a very poorly written statement calling the filing a clear blackmail attempt. He also added that Tony Busby and his anonymous client have, quote, made a terrible judgment in thinking that all celebrities are the same.
If his PR team saw this statement, they all need sacking.
Hmm.
It is so awful. And here is why. Carter followed up with, "My only heartbreak is for my family. My wife and I will have to sit our children down, one of whom is at the age where her friends will surely see the press and ask questions about the nature of these claims, and explain the cruelty and greed of people." Hot tip. Never, ever in a situation like this say that you are the one who has been wronged.
Don't start with that.
Like, what a bizarre thing to say. And then this is the bit which I will come back to.
Uh-huh.
"I'm a young man who made it out of the project of Brooklyn. We don't play these types of games. We have very strict codes and honour. We protect children. You seem to exploit people for personal gain. Only your... I didn't write this. That's why it sounds weird. Only your network of conspiracy theorists, fake psychics, will believe the idiotic claims that you have levied against me, if not for the seriousness surrounding harm to kids, would be very laughable. Then, Jay-Z released a separate statement via his own entertainment outfit, who are, of course, Roc Nation. And this time, Jay-Z specifically went after Tony Busby. He called him a 1-800 lawyer. Combs does that quite a lot as well. Who's just in it for the money and the fame and not for upholding truth or justice. And I get it, but it does get quite a lot worse for Tony Busby. But other than that, at that stage, or since, to be honest, in terms of public statements, Jay-Z has been totally silent.
Mm.
Which does seem odd when you consider that he and the other Sean have been friends for quite such a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's like video footage of them on stage together where Jay-Z calls him his brother. They're incredibly close and have been for a very, very long time.
There's also video footage of Diddy smacking him on the ass twice on stage.
Well, there you go. Sean Jay-Z Carter may try to deny the significance of his relationship with Diddy, but we have come with the receipts that make dismissal of their decades-long companionship impossible, even for the most deluded person on the planet. The fact is that Jay-Z was right by Sean Combs' side from the very beginning. The two Seans first collaborated on a track together in 1996 called Brooklyn's Finest.
Presumably, private Catholic school in Mount Vernon's finest wasn't as catchy.
No, no. So after Biggie died, Carter featured on Sean Combs' Grief album, the one that used Biggie's unreleased tracks to boost Diddy's own personal sales. And Combs paid it back the same year and appeared on Carter's second album, In My Lifetime, Volume 1. And he also co-wrote I Know What Girls Like with Jay-Z and Lil' Kim. In 1999, the pair collaborated again on Sean Combs' album Forever. Beyoncé's hands weren't clean either. Everyone forgets that the B-side of her debut hit as a solo artist was, in fact, a collaboration with Sean Combs.
Everyone forgets Summertime.
Yeah. Just for context, when Beyoncé started going out with Jay-Z, she was 19 and he was 31.
Where have we heard that before in this series?
Yeah, sounds like very similar numbers.
19. And that was just when they were like official. Like there's so many pictures of them together when she's much younger. And they're like, oh no, we only met each other when she was 18 years old. Bollocks.
Yeah, yeah. And even then, it's weird.
Oh but, yeah, even without that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not fine.
But, you know, let's leave Beyoncé behind for now and let's stick with the two Seans. Jay-Z and Diddy performed together on countless occasions over the years. And offstage, the pair have dominated the hip-hop rich lists since 2010. With Sean Combs taking over Jay-Z in 2012. And if you want to play net worth top trumps, we're looking at Jay-Z at a staggering $460 million versus Sean Combs' $550 million.
He doesn't stay on top, like Jay-Z overtakes him again. And obviously yeah. Jay-Z's a billionaire now.
Yeah.
But yeah, in 2012, Diddy had more money than Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
And we know, because I told you last week, Jay-Z was at the BET Awards when Combs received his Lifetime Achievement Trophy. But that is far from the first time he has celebrated the other Sean's achievements publicly. In 2016, Jay-Z appeared on stage at the Bad Boy Reunion Tour. He's never been a bad boy artist, which I think is significant because, like, you can't argue there was any sort of internal politics at play.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got his own fucking label. He doesn't need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Jay-Z comes out and Sean Combs says, in front of thousands of people, Bad Boy is celebrating 20 years of hits, but this is extended family. Whenever I get in trouble, this is the one I call. That is my straightest right here. This is my brother. More recently, the pair of them celebrated their untold wealth at the Black Billionaire Brunch in 2020, which was an event hosted by Roc Nation. And there, Combs once again made a speech about Sean Carter saying, we're here together in keeping staying together. We're getting tighter, united, we stand. Jay-Z doesn't as often publicly proclaim stuff like this.
Yeah.
But he, you know, yeah, man. It does feel a little bit like, please say you love me, like from Diddy's like side. So, with all of that in mind, and there's more, you can go and find it. It would seem that Sean Carter will be your best friend in the whole world, all the way up until your house gets raided by federal agents. And if we consider that, which I have at length, even if Jay-Z was falsely named in the 13-year-old Jane Doe lawsuit, the VMA one, my question remains, how can you have been so close with someone for decades, have gone to hundreds of their notorious parties, and have no idea what they were doing?
Mm-hmm.
I just think that ignorance is a statistical impossibility. So even if he wasn't involved, which I don't believe, even if that is true, and he never sexually assaulted anyone, he still let it happen. And then had the gall to say that he has a strict hood code of ethics when it comes to children.
Yeah. Yeah.
Disgusting. Mm. There is no way, in my opinion, that no one fucking cares about and doesn't matter, that Jay-Z didn't know.
Yeah. I think that's the thing, right? It's, was he involved? That's a separate question. How could he not have known?
Mm.
Jay-Z was incredibly upset to be named in his best billionaire friend's giant mess. And so instead of, I don't know, coming out and saying, I don't know, washing his hands of Sean Combs, which he doesn't do.
No, he doesn't.
He goes on the attack with lawyer Tony Busby instead, and he goes after him for defamation, citing that Busby accused him of a horrific crime without adequately vetting the allegation. Carter wanted Busby to be dismissed from the case, and he and his law firm to be fined for daring to drag him into it. According to Carter, Busby was counting on public pressure being enough to make him settle out of court. But Carter was not impressed by this tactic, saying that it made me want to expose you for the fraud you are, in a very public fashion. So no, I will not give you one red penny.
Yeah, he's violently on the attack.
Yeah. He also insisted that Busby file a criminal complaint because, quote, whomever would commit such a crime against a minor should be locked away. Would you not agree?
Yeah, what he means by that is that, like, if it were true, if it were legitimate,
why are you just doing civil?
Yes.
Yeah. And again, look, we don't know. We don't know if Jay-Z was involved in any of this stuff, but I think maybe let's give him the benefit of the doubt and he just knew that something dodgy was going on. Maybe this allegation has come out, it's not been vetted properly. Maybe let's say it isn't real. And then that's why he's doubling down so hard, because he's like, kill it, nip it in the bud, slam it down so hard so that nobody else comes after me. Possibly. Because he's very confident with what he's saying. He's very, very confident with what he's saying. And short of the badly written PR, like, announcement that he makes, everything else he's saying is probably what he would be advice to say, right? Why don't you take it to criminal? Why don't you do this?
Lots of reasons.
Mm.
So I can understand why he would say that, but it also shows me that a lawyer did not vet that, because there are lots of reasons why you would go after civil rather than criminal.
Oh yeah, I mean, lower standard, but I mean, like, to like the public layman hearing that, it sounds like, yeah, why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you go for the criminal case?
Exactly. There is potentially this understanding that, like, if you're not going for criminal, then it's less likely to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And there are differences that we touched on last week, but let's really dig into why filing a civil case doesn't mean they didn't do it.
No, of course not.
So specifically, attorneys advising those alleging sexual abuse, sexual assault, sexual claims, they will often advise their clients to pursue a civil case rather than a criminal one for a few reasons. Number one, it's more likely that the victim's story will be heard in court in a civil case, because when it comes to criminal trial, it's down to the district attorney whether it even makes it into a courtroom in the first place. So if it's like a catharsis thing of, like, you want your story to be told, there is a higher chance of that happening in a civil situation. In civil suits, the plaintiff themselves has a lot more control. And also, as Suri said, the burden of proof in civil cases is lower. And although prison time is only in the criminal court realm, monetary damages can be more helpful in supporting victims of legitimate abuse.
Absolutely. It all makes sense from the legal perspective. It's the optics of it, and he's able to capitalize on that.
Because I totally agree.
You don't have enough evidence and you're doing it for the money. And I think also he does himself a favor by not going anywhere near settling out of court, because it makes it look like he is. This is not true.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not saying it is or isn't.
No.
I'm saying he kind of handles it with the right level of like furiousness at being accused of this, which I think helps him in the optics.
I agree. But there's something he does next, which doesn't follow that pattern, I would argue.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Busby, lawyer. He knows all of these things.
Yes.
Right. He does initially hit back at Roc Nation and Jay-Z and say, I'm not afraid of you. Like, you can threaten me. You can come for my law firm. You can try and sue me personally.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of you.
Mm-hmm.
And that, optically for Tony Busby, worked quite well for a limited period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And he also points out that, like, it's a tactic. Quite often, high-profile cases like this, when the defense want more time, mm-hmm. they will file and file and file and file over and over again to, like, elongate it. And Jay-Z's team have actually been found to have done that by a judge.
Yeah.
It's a common tactic. It's a common thing. So, yes, optically, it looks like he's in the pursuit of justice and truth and how dare you. But it's all a game. It's all a game of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Sean Carter did end up withdrawing his motion to penalize Busby and his firm personally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, didn't appear to be too bothered by the whole thing, because he was still front and center at the Grammys and on the board of the Super Bowl committee that put Kendrick front and center. And since I started writing this, he does kind of come out on top, because the complaint against Jay-Z, the VMA 2013-year-old sexual assault filing, has now been withdrawn.
Yeah.
And it's been dismissed with prejudice, which means it can never be brought again. That's it. That's the tweet.
Mm-hmm. But that hasn't been enough for Jay-Z, because he has filed a $20 million defamation suit against Mr. 1-800 Tony Busby. Now, this has nothing to do with money. Sean Carter does not need $20 million. But what this suit means is that Tony Busby will have to explain why he pulled the case with prejudice. If there has been some kind of filing error, then he would have just dismissed it without prejudice, meaning that it could have been refiled at a later date. Withdrawing it in the way that he has really does give a lot of fuel to the fire for Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
Now, attorneys are usually protected against this type of complaint unless they have acted with gross negligence or malice, which is what Jay-Z is really trying to prove.
Yeah, I mean, of course, attorneys have to be protected against things like this. Otherwise, nothing would ever get done, because everyone would just be continually suing lawyers for bringing anything against them. It very specifically has to be proven, which is what Jay-Z is trying to do, that Tony Busby knew it wasn't true.
Yeah. And also, probably because of the way in which this case has been withdrawn, it's given Jay-Z the opportunity, I would say, to also file a suit against the Jane Doe who made the accusation. I'm not saying that's the right thing to do. He has gone after her for making what he's saying is malicious accusations and for defamation, which for some people might make him look like, oh, look, he's really innocent because he's even willing to go after her. But it also does make him look like quite a nasty man.
I really thought about this.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's a really unnecessary thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, she's filed anonymously. She hasn't said anything in the press.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, optically, I can understand, but I would have a not that I'm defending him at all, I would have less malice in my soul if he stopped at Tony Busby.
Yeah.
And because he's done that, Tony Busby has had to step down from a bunch of cases that have been filed in a specific area of New York because Jay-Z's going after him. So, like, it's had a lot of impact across the whole Combs case.
I think from Jay-Z's perspective, he's like, well, you're lying, so I'm going to do this to stop other people. And I think if you are on the side that Jay-Z isn't involved, it looks like a powerful move to go after somebody who's lied about you. But if you look at it another way, yes, optically, it looks also very bad for him. Yeah. It's interesting. I can see why he's done it. Yeah. I can see why he's done it.
Yeah. Some people have been blowing the Nasty Man whistle for quite some time. Most loudly, songwriter Jaguar Wright.
Yeah.
Who has been pickling my TikTok FYP for a couple of years, really. Mm. She knows Jay-Z very well. She has sung backup for him on a lot of records. Lot of live events as well. She has been in and around the industry for a long time.
Yes.
And one of the things that she said that I will never forget, she was like, in all of my years in the industry, I have only ever signed two NDAs. Both of them were given to me by Sean Carter. I will get there.
Mm-hmm.
Since the pandemic,
yeah,
Jaguar Wright has spent a lot less time making music. And a lot more time talking shit. And I have never been more here for anything in my life.
Yeah, I think, look, with Jaguar Wright, the phrase, a broken clock is right twice a day, comes to mind. Because she's wild.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that what she's saying should be discredited in its entirety because of how wild she is. But it's one of those things, isn't it? It's like, she is kind of the perfect person to be screaming about all this because she just sounds like the crazy person screaming about UFOs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And like she, it's not like she started doing this in the last couple of years.
She's been talking about it for a long time.
Not like she did it even when Cassie filed. It's not like when she started doing it when the video came out. She's been saying this shit for years.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, I'm glad she's had her moment.
Absolutely.
And it's not just been around this sort of stuff. Erykah Badu, she fucking hates Erykah Badu. Oh, she hates Erykah Badu so much.
Ah!
Do you know that Miss Jackson by Outkast is about Erykah Badu's
mom? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Because Andre 3000 and Erykah Badu have got a child together.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so okay. Mary J. Blige, she also really hates Mary J. Blige. She feels like Mary J. Blige stole her career. And also is a secret lesbian. That's, which?
Maybe. But Jaguar, this is why you look mad.
But no one has taken more heat from Jaguar Wright than Diddy and Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
Before even the like Jay-Z filing happened, she was doing interviews being like, has anyone put these things together?
Yeah.
Anybody at all?
Yeah.
And actually, Jaguar was one of, if not the first person to talk about freak-offs publicly, and she very sagely, in my opinion, points out, what HR department do you know that has worked for any of these labels? She's not wrong.
Ah!
Where are you going to go when that happens to you?
No, absolutely.
Allegedly.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that Piers Morgan interview that I touched upon last week. And if you guys remember, Jaguar Wright caused a huge stir when she went on the Piers Morgan show last October. And in that interview, Jaguar Wright describes Sean Combs as a, quote, victim-making machine and Sean Carter as a monster. Now, if we believe Jaguar, then Beyonce is also in on the whole thing. She says it, not us, she's saying it. And she also says that Beyonce and Jay-Z are a nasty couple who do nasty things.
She's not kind about Beyonce. She is very much of the opinion that Beyonce's attitude is, as long as I get to be the best and I get to be the prettiest, I don't give a fuck.
And I can believe that. And look, when we've talked about Beyonce in the past, we were like, oh, you didn't talk about all the fact that she was probably groomed because she was so young when she met Jay-Z. I'm not saying that those things...
I'm not saying that that's not true.
Are not true. But at what point, as an adult woman, if she is involved or in the know about any of this, at which point does that scrub her of all agency?
I agree.
Of being involved in this, like, that's not fair, really. And I don't like her for various other reasons, not just this. But anyway, look, let's stick with the Piers Morgan interview. In that interview, he asks Jaguar if she considers Sean Combs to be a dangerous man. And she responds with the following. I think he is one of the most dangerous people I've ever met. And one of the reasons for that is he has collateral on all of Hollywood. Anyone who thinks he's not going to talk is crazy.
I am surprised that he has not yet been Epsteined, to be honest.
Yeah, same. Epsteined or no Epsteined, we're yet to see, but I think it's probably a bit late, isn't it? Trial's about to kick off, so let's...
TikTok.
Nice. But yeah, maybe Mr. and Mrs. Carter, though, shouldn't just be worried about what Sean Combs will be squealing on about them to save his own skin, because Jaguar Wright claims that she actually knows victims. That Beyonce and her husband, Sean Carter, have held prisoner and put on planes against their will.
Aaliyah was unconscious when she was put on that plane.
Yeah. And Jaguar Wright also says that her contacts, the ones who say that they have been personally victimized by Beyonce
dead.
And Sean Carter and who aren't dead, are ready to talk. So maybe that's why he hasn't been Epsteined. Wait and see how it all plays out. I don't know.
I don't know either. And as Sari said, Jaguar Wright does not present herself as a particularly reliable narrator. A lot of people not only dismiss her because she seems mental.
Yeah.
But because they just sort of like write her off as like a jealous wannabe who never really made it and wishes she was Mary J. Blige.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to say those things.
I mean, you do look nuts if you're just like, Mary J. Blige stole my career and she's a secret lesbian. I mean, just pick and choose. Just talk about the assaults.
Yeah.
Just talk about the sexual assaults. Don't go on a rant against Mary J. Blige because then you look mental.
Interestingly though, Jaguar Wright was arrested for property theft very recently, only to be released without charge. An instance which she obviously is convinced was an attempt to silence her.
Sure.
Something to do with a U-Haul van. Very odd, very nebulous and weird. Mm. But yeah, released, no charge. And maybe it was an attempt to threaten her. She has made some very big claims about some even bigger people. And she's even gone as far to say that Sean Combs has picked off his competitors by saying this. Uptown Records started with five people. Andre Harrell, AIB, Heavy D, Puffy, Kim Porter was the longest working employee. She was there from the very beginning. She was Andre's personal assistant. Kim is dead. Heavy D is dead. Andre Harrell is dead. There are only two left. Puffy and AI almost died.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Apparently, all of the people who are now dead, according to Jaguar Wright, were writing tell-all books. And she just asks questions like, nothing's ever seemed to have happened to Diddy, has it?
Mm.
He must be the luckiest motherfucker alive. Because everybody that worked on Uptown Records from the beginning are gone. He's the only one left.
Yeah.
And like, look, sure, he denies. Tupac, Biggie, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm never putting anything past him. I'm sure he would have picked off those people if he sued him.
Absolutely. Nothing seems unbelievable.
No, absolutely not.
Jaguar Wright is not the only one piping up from the sidelines. The mother of Sean Combs' first son, a woman named Misa Hylton, has responded to the leaked footage of her baby daddy beating the shit out of Cassie in that hotel corridor by saying the following. I know exactly how she feels. And through my empathy, it has triggered my own trauma. Which is pretty damning. As was the day that Sean Combs' lead counsel, Anthony Rico, resigned. And Rico is a super, super hotshot defense lawyer, as you would, of course, expect someone like Sean Combs to have employed. In fact, Rico is such a super hotshot lawyer that he actually represented a member of Al-Qaeda in 2001, but he stepped down from Diddy's team after just a few weeks, stating the following. Although I have provided Sean Combs with the high level of legal representation expected by the court, under no circumstances can I continue to effectively serve as counsel for Sean Combs. There are sufficient reasons for brevity in my application for withdrawal as counsel in this case.
You will read everywhere that he represented Osama bin Laden. That's not quite true.
Sure.
He did represent a member of Al-Qaeda in a trial where 8 people were on trial, one of which was Osama bin Laden. So his Osama bin Laden number is 1.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't quite represent Osama bin Laden.
Doesn't look great for you when the guy who represented Al-Qaeda is like, I can't help you, mate.
No, I think optically, no, it doesn't. It is unlikely that that's actually the reason. Obviously, that's how it looks.
Yeah.
And lead counsel isn't really as important as it sounds. I believe there's a team of 6. And lead counsel just means that, like, if everyone's talking all at once, the judge can just be like, lead counsel, can you please?
Okay.
So it's not as important as it
sounds.
Seems. It may be that he just isn't getting on with the legal team.
Yeah.
But I don't care. It's great press.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. So yeah. When the literal devil's advocate can't defend you, you must have done something really, really bad. As we are all desperate to know what it is.
Yeah, it does seem like there was this massive discovery and then Anthony Rico is like, I can no longer look myself in the mirror if I defend this.
Yeah.
Man. Probably not what happened. However, there are a lot of guesses out there as to what this bombshell information may have been.
Sure.
Including...
Mm-hmm. Hit me.
Necromancy, child sacrifice, Haitian voodoo, Basquiat soul swapping, mermaid banquets, goes on, right?
None of those were on my bingo card.
The necromancy one is my favourite one. Because one of the like daily shows that I've been consuming in the research for this is like, oh, there's no way it could have been necromancy, because if he was charged with necromancy, like it would be front page, blah, blah, blah. I was like, and first of all, I looked it up. Necromancy is not a crime in the state of New York. And secondly, like, that doesn't really... I'm only bringing this up because it was quite... The discussion of stuff like this was quite, like, snooty about not legacy media.
Sure.
And I just found it a bit, like, the way they were discussing it, like, oh, there's absolutely no way, because if he had been charged with that, it would... They never said he was charged. And also, he couldn't be charged because necromancy is not illegal.
I just feel like, look, the lines these people were willing to cross in the things that they fucking did, and by people I mean Sean Combs, why is it therefore beyond the realms of possibility that he did child sacrifice?
It quite. And also it was very like, oh, like I understand that you're doing it for like rage bait and you're doing it for views and for clicks. And I was like, okay, your copy is one of the most sensationalist things I've seen.
Yeah. On one hand, it's I understand this thing of like, we don't need to make cases like this more sensational than they already are, because what's happened is already unbelievably sensational. And on the other hand, like I said earlier, I don't want us to go too far down that road of like conspiracy hat theory with this, because then it kind of weakens the whole case. Because then if you start saying things like, oh, there was all this Haitian voodoo, blah, and then it's not true, then people could be like, well, maybe none of it's true. It is true.
I agree.
But also, I don't know why it would be so hard for people to believe that things like that were happening when everything else was happening.
Absolutely. And I'm just like, you can't tell me that putting necromancy in your copy didn't boost your downloads. Like, you're doing the same thing. You're not above it.
And I also just think one of the like starkest things that I felt throughout this entire series that we've done with Diddy is just all of the similarities he bears to a cult leader, right? And just because I think he just couldn't be bothered to go through with the actual cult, but like in many ways it is very similar, this idea of like this puppet master, this control over large groups of people, using your power and influence in order to exert whatever you want and twisting and skewing everybody within your like remits, morality compass or their view of the world in order to extract whatever you want from them. Like he's doing all of these things. So yeah, again, I'll come back to like, why wouldn't he push that further? Because one of the things we know with offenders like this is they get bored. They want to push it further and further and further to see how far they can push other people to go. The whole thing of him forcing his victims to engage in non-consensual sexual acts with other people, including sex workers, was so he could see how far he could push them without him even being involved. How far can I push both of these people that don't want to be doing this into doing what I want? I just don't see that he wouldn't have done something.
No.
Like, why not chuck a bit of voodoo in there? Because he thinks he's fucking God.
I totally agree. Do you want to talk about Justin Bieber?
I do.
So, many people may have noticed that Justin Bieber's been looking a little worse for wear recently.
Yeah.
Maybe it is because of Selena.
Because
she's engaged now.
Mm-hmm.
Good for her. He seems so nice.
Yeah.
Also, right, theories around Justin Bieber are endless. But the one I find very amusing is that his wife, like, yes, absolutely was a fan of him. That like, she was his stalker. And you can see her in all of these pictures. Yeah. How is she? Alec Baldwin is her uncle. It is not like she just sprung from the ground. Like, she's a famous person. And I'm sure he is upset that Selena's getting engaged. But could his very public Instagram meltdowns, pretending to be about Selena getting engaged, actually be a smokescreen?
Mm-hmm.
Because of Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah. This is the thing. Coinciding timelines.
Mm-hmm.
How do you unpick which is which?
Quite.
I think it's probably got more to do with this.
I agree.
Mm.
As we told you last week, Justin was discovered by Usher, but actually Usher was sent by Diddy, when Justin was just out of nappies. And given what we know about Usher's former flatmate, there have always been rumours surrounding Justin Bieber having been sexually exploited as a child and also now. And according to Jaguar Wright, it was Justin Bieber who broke up Odell Beckham Jr. and Kim Kardashian. And there is a TikTok of Justin Bieber pretending to sock off Odell Beckham Jr. at a freak-off hosted by Sean Combs. That video exists.
Yeah.
Right. The way people talk about it, it makes, if you haven't seen it, it makes it sound like it's crime scene footage of Justin Bieber being abused.
Yeah.
It isn't that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great.
No.
But it's not as sinister
mm-hmm.
as people are describing it
yeah.
to be. However, Jaguar Wright is all in, having said, quote, they've got that boy on the clock.
Yeah.
And I could believe it.
Absolutely.
And also, Odell is the subject of more than just hearsay. Very, very recently, I'm talking in like the last 4 days, he has been named in a sexual assault filing, and so have LeBron James, Beyonce, and Gloria Estefan.
What?
Mm-hmm. So, it's a civil suit.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all denying it.
Mm.
I believe Beyonce and Gloria Estefan are only named as witnesses.
Okay.
Not as perpetrators.
Mm-hmm.
Odell Beckham Jr., on the other hand, don't know. But it's also, it could all go away. Like the, and like loads of them have, you know, mm-hmm. it might not be, which is why I haven't done like a whole like layout. The point is that people are being named now
mm-hmm.
and it's going to happen more and more and more. And I think it's interesting
mm.
that Odell Beckham Jr. is one of them, given what his associations already are.
Well, while we're at it, why don't we chuck some more famous names into the mix? Because Nicki Minaj is apparently sitting on some evidence as well. In the gospel, according to Jaguar Wright, apparently there is an audio recording of Nicki Minaj's ex, Meek Mill, and Diddy making sexy noises, which was recorded by Young Money herself at a freak-off in Calabasas. And since Nicki and Meek broke up, she is apparently waiting to drop that shit on Meek. So we'll have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Sean Combs' web of alleged grubby sex trafficking spreads far and wide. And sadly, the apple doesn't seem to have fallen very far from the tree either. Sean Combs' son, Christian, has also had a sexual assault claim filed against him. The suit was filed in April 2024, a month after the federal raids that found all that baby oil. And the person making this claim is somebody named Grace McCarty, who claims that while she was working as a yacht hand in the Caribbean, Christian Combs sexually assaulted her. The yacht had been chartered by Combs Sr. for a family holiday, and Grace is going after him as well, saying that he is responsible for all his charter guests.
They do say that on Below Deck a lot.
So according to Grace, that charter featured a constant rotation of suspected sex workers and other A-list celebrities, such as French Montana and Cuba Gooding Jr.
Not Cuba.
Yeah, man. He's in it up to his neck.
I was really sad about that.
Yeah. Unconscious sex workers were apparently scattered all over the yacht and bottles were laced with drugs and left lying around in what Grace describes as an environment of debauchery. On the 28th of December 2022, early in the morning, an absolutely battered Christian King Combs blocked Grace from leaving, got naked, and then attempted to force her to perform oral copulation. The attorney representing the father and son has called Grace's filing lewd, meritless, and filled with manufactured lies. And they also used Jay-Z's excuse that Grace's lawyers were just trying to embarrass the defendants into some sort of quick out-of-court settlement.
Okay, well done, we did it. No more. We don't have to go through any more
Hooray!
Suits. That's the last one. Sean Combs himself has been quite silent.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, now he's in jail. But before that, not much coming from him, apart from a video he posted back in May 2024. Ironically, almost exactly a year to the day of his trial start date. But it's him standing by the ocean and he's like staring into a tropical monsoon with like open arms. And over the top is the voice of his spiritual advisor. He's someone's called T.D. Jakes. And he says, not hysterical, not frantic, not anxious, but steady the storm. A post which entirely encapsulates my problem with the wellness industry.
Yeah.
I think about this a lot, right? Because I don't doubt that maybe I could benefit from some of it. But I just can't get past the fact that there is nothing stopping a really terrible person buying themselves a book that's like, you're amazing. I can't get past it. I think like I need to like, in the end, I think I just need to accept that like, if it works, it works. It doesn't matter. It's like crystals. Who cares? But I struggle with it so much of like, how can everybody in the world be good? Doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. I don't know what the wellness industry is trying to preach to us. I just think it's trying to steal your money.
I mean, how can you be a spiritual advisor to Sean Combs?
Hey, man, someone's got to do it.
But do they?
I mean, someone's going to do it. So why not? It could be you.
Okay, well, we're just going to have to wait to see whether the storm is steadied or whether it swallows Sean Combs whole.
Yeah.
As it stands, and it could all change, Sean Combs, disgraced music mogul, is locked up and awaiting his trial, and maybe this bad boy really could get life.
I think predictions. I think it's going to happen. I think he's done. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who he takes down with him.
Well, that's it, isn't it? I think there will be people who go down. I think a lot won't. And I think he will be scapegoated for a much larger problem.
Yes, absolutely. That's what I was going to say. I think most people, if any, I don't think anyone's going to go down with him purely because I just don't think the system's built like that. I think he will be buried in order to cover up what was barely covered up in the fucking first place. And then everyone will just move on and pretend that he was just one rotten apple in the bushel and everything else is fine.
Absolutely.
For now, let's talk about who's been waiting in the wings to laugh in Sean Combs' face. The eternal thorn in Ja Rule's side and professional hater, 50 Cent.
He hates Ja Rule.
Yeah.
But he really hates Jay.
Yeah. Let's really get into just how much 50 Cent hates Sean Combs and how long he has made absolutely no secret of it. Back in 2006, yes, 19 years ago.
Oh, no, do not say that.
I'm gonna. 50 released a diss track alleging that Sean Combs shot Biggie and called in the hit on Tupac. And he has also called Sean Combs out for profiting off his dead friend's back catalogue. There is also a long history of 50 calling Combs fruity and refusing to go to his parties because Combs would, quote, hug you from the front and the back at the same time. And it's also been revealed that 50 may well get the last laugh Because 50 started making a documentary about Sean Combs 10 years ago. And it is now in production at Netflix. And it's called, of course, Did He Do It?
The favourite thing of mine that has happened, has come out of doing these two episodes, is when I find someone who doesn't know what it's called. I'm like, this is amazing. I can't wait to drop this bomb.
I felt like he just spent 10 years secretly filming Diddy at any opportunity and laughing about that name.
I would.
It's all you need. Then just give it all to Netflix for millions and millions and millions of dollars.
And even in Sean Combs' goddamn hour, even when it looks like it cannot get worse for him, it does. Just last week, there were two major developments in his criminal case, the case that the state is bringing against him. He was smacked with two more criminal counts on top of the three that he's already pleaded not guilty to. These new charges allege that Sean Combs was engaged in sex trafficking as recently as last year, using force, fraud, or coercion to compel a woman identified as victim two to engage in commercial sexual acts from at least 2021 to 2024. The federal indictment also alleges that Combs transported commercial sex workers to engage in prostitution during the same period of time. Camp Combs have stated that these are not new allegations or new accusers. They are the same individuals, former long-term girlfriends, who were involved in consensual relationships. This was their private sex life, defined by consent, not coercion. And that's true. There are no new charges. There are no new accusers. It's just like ominous additions like forced labour.
Yeah.
And connection to the racketeering conspiracy and also new dates. It's a longer period of time now rather than like totally fresh. Mm-hmm. Combs' main lawyer, now that Rico has run away to defend another demon, is called Mark Agnifilo. And he has maintained, whilst preparing his defence, that all of the freak-offs were 100% consensual activity. And he's applied the same logic to the leaked 2016 CCTV footage of Combs dragging Cassie down that hallway. According to this lawyer, the footage shows nothing more than a, quote, glimpse into a complex but decade-long consensual relationship. Do you kiss your mother with that mouth?
What?
What an unbelievable thing to say.
What does that mean?
I mean, what else has he got, really? But, no. Like, it's shocking.
Yeah, that I'm shocked by that.
They do take particular issue, though, with Combs being accused of transporting male escorts over state lines. That one they are trying to get thrown out.
Yeah.
Women don't seem to bother them as much.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's all deep-rooted in the homophobia around Sean Combs and the industry and everything. And he's like, you know, it's one thing everybody saying I raped a bunch of women. But don't you dare say I raped a bunch of men.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you fucking say it. So the women featured in the criminal trial are known only, or were known only, as victims 1, 2, 3, and 4. But it was announced last week that Cassie Ventura herself will be testifying, and she has decided to do so not anonymously. So she will no longer be referred to as victim 1.
For a while, it was announced that she was going to testify and everyone assumed it was as a witness.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was like, no, I'm victim one.
Yeah. Now, the other three women will be testifying in court as well, but their names will not be released to the press or to the public.
As yet.
As yet. Because, yeah, if the last few days are anything to go by, that could all change within the next hour. So a definitive ending is not something we can give you this week because we are recording it before the start of the trial. Instead, we are going to direct you to a video essay by a man on YouTube called FD Signifier. It's called Bigger Than Diddy. It's the YouTube video that Hannah referred to earlier, which definitely deserves all of your time, mainly for the description of Diddy in there on mic as, quote, a black void of charisma and magnetism. And I think we can all agree with that.
And we have made this point. FD Signifier makes this point. Everyone's made this point. I'm going to make it again because it's my show and I can do what I like. Everyone knew for years. Avoiding Diddy and his parties was a joke made in loads of interviews that you can see. There's footage of them. They're in, like, there's clips of them of everyone being like laughing, like, oh, yeah, don't go there. Like, yeah. It's like when Courtney Love was on the red carpet decades ago,
mm-hmm.
and someone asks her, like, what advice would you give to someone trying to make it in the industry? And she's like, oh, like, I'm not going to say it because I'll get in trouble. And then she's like, no, fuck it. She's like, if Harvey Weinstein invites you to a hotel room, do not go.
Yeah.
That happens. That sort of like, everyone knows it's true thing.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple times on camera. It's a joke. No one cared until there was video proof and it was undeniable.
Yeah.
So many people, hundreds, I would say, didn't just allow Diddy to exist. They allowed him to thrive. They enabled him. And that's different.
Absolutely.
It's different to, you know, a closed secret. That, you know, it's different to even an industry secret.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were making jokes about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it would be too easy for anyone, us included, to say that the only thing wrong with the whole industry is Diddy himself. And that once he goes down, hip hop's going to be like sunshine and rainbows forever. And no one's ever going to get exploited again. And no one's ever going to be raped as a trade-off for a record deal ever, ever again. But we have to say it out loud, like, it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not.
He was just a symptom of the problem. He was just like a gargoyle, a demon that was able to be born out of the mm-hmm. environment that he forced himself into. And he did it because he probably knew he could be in. It wasn't because he was a musically talented man.
No.
It was because he was good. He was good at recognizing what song was going to be a hit. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you that, Diddy. And he knew that it was a place in which he would have unfettered access to all sorts of people who were going to, I'm saying, look the other way, because it feels like an industry where it's like, well, no one's going to give me a medal for raising all these problems.
Mm.
But somebody might give me a record deal if I just keep really quiet.
Yeah. And bad people are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Bad people exist in every industry,
yeah.
every walk of life. And we've all met bad people, and they can buy self-help books too. The reason it went as far as it did is because of the industry and the way it is constructed.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've talked about this before. Abusers will exist in any place where there are vulnerable people to exploit. And here, there's not just the vulnerability of the people that it can exploit. There's also millions and millions and millions of dollars and fame and a deeply entrenched feeling from people for self-preservation.
Mm-hmm.
And Diddy exploited it incredibly well. And that's why, absolutely, he is just a symptom of the larger problem.
Yeah. And that problem is not going to go away just because he goes to prison, which he will.
Yeah. R. Kelly's already in prison.
Yeah. The larger issue is the misogyny and also the homophobia within hip hop has gone unchallenged forever. And I do think there is an element of, like, we've applied the invisibility of sex workers and strippers, that, like, less dead feeling. We have applied that in a way to female and male recording artists because we perceive them to be unworthy of empathy due to their vapid pursuit of fame. So we think that they had it coming. And we're all guilty of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we have to hold our hands up to that. And, you know, the whole system is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to stop pretending that it isn't. And I would love to be able to leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
But my brain won't let me. So instead of closing on a critique of mm-hmm. the music industry, I'm going to introduce a new thought.
And let's do it.
I can't stop thinking about how many people around Sean Combs are dead or in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is,
mm-hmm.
how has he lasted as long as he has without protection? And if so, who was protecting him, and why did they decide to stop? I know who my bills builder are. So there you have it.
Solid. Everything you need to know.
Yeah.
Before the trial of Sean P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, Huff and Puff, Puffer Jacket, Combs, get started.
Yeah.
Imminently. So yeah, we'll see you on the other side.
Yes.
With some sort of update.
I think this trial is going to go on for a really long time. And even when the criminal trial concludes,
mm-hmm.
there's hundreds of civil cases as well. So how are we going to keep on top of it? I don't know. But my ask is to consider that someone had to go down.
Mm.
Who decided it was going to be him? And we'll see you next week.
We will.
For something very else.
Exactly.
I don't want to think about this for a bit.
No. Nope. But yeah, we will do our best to update. Let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Until then. Well, no, until next week. Goodbye.